Welcome into the Bear Den. I'm Matt Workman. I'm joined by Joe Goodman. Joe, how are you doing today?
I am doing pretty solid, ready to attack a new week and hopefully get to another weekend soon enough.
Yes, so right now we have three Saturdays before any college football remaining. Four before Baylor football. So I'm getting like geared up. Like I'm ready to go.
Yeah, I'm antsy for it for sure. Every time I talk to pretty much anybody that's in like our Baylor Twitter sphere.
Yeah.
That's what I keep bringing up is how excited I am for whether it's tailgating or making it up there to games or just having to watch on Saturdays. Luckily, I will have Premier League starting this next weekend to hold me over for a few weeks.
Yeah. So Premier League, what is that broadcast on?
You can find it mostly on Peacock.
Okay. That's what I thought.
But there'll be some matches that'll be on NBC, NBC Sports, that kind of thing.
Yeah. It's cool. I got Peacock. Yeah. Well, there you go. We got some Premier League. And again, like I follow it and we've kind of talked about like I picked a team and then I get crap for it because I guess they're good, but I'm not like,
yeah, you're what, a City fan?
Yeah. And I swear whenever I'd picked it, I was looking for games and I put it out on Twitter and people said, well, just, you don't want to pick someone at the bottom because of relegation and you don't want to be a front runner. You kind of want someone in contention, right? So I kind of just picked in the middle and that's where I landed.
It's been a while since they were in the middle.
Well, I mean, I think it was a listing. I can't remember how long ago it was because I just picked it. And then I haven't really, it's not like I'm about to get into it hardcore. I want to try to, but I haven't yet. I kind of follow them on Twitter and stuff like that. And get notifications when they have a match and things of that nature. But I couldn't tell you anything about it.
Got it. Okay. Well, you guys this summer signed an extremely good player. So you should be even better than you were last year.
Because that's what we do. See, that's all I got. So I don't know anything about it. But when they win, I'll get on Twitter. It's like, that's right. Man City. What?
Yeah, you signed a forward named Erling Haaland, who played for a Bundesliga, a German club named Dortmund for the last couple of years. So he was the hottest player on the market. He's very, very good.
Yeah, because the good thing about international soccer or European soccer is you can kind of get your fix pretty much year round, right?
Close. There's like 3 to 4, like there's probably like 3 months, I'm thinking. Yeah, I think it's about 3 months. Like this summer, they don't really play. But it goes by pretty quick. And yeah, they play this year. They're starting early because the World Cup is in the wintertime instead of being in the summertime.
Yeah.
So there's a World Cup break in the middle of the season. So they're starting it a little early this year. But normally it kind of runs at the same time as basketball season. And then it just starts a little bit earlier than basketball and ends a little bit later than basketball.
But like you have Premier League, but then there's like Champions League, which
yeah, that ends normally around the same time. From Premier League. The seasons end around the same time. So
okay,
but they will have I root for Tottenham, and Tottenham has played 3 friendlies in the last 3 or 4 weeks. So like they'll travel around. City played in Houston 2 weeks ago, and then they played last week up at Lambeau Field against Bayern Munich out of Germany. So they'll play like friendly exhibition matches. Basically they'll travel to other countries and play, and it's a way for them to basically market and try to find more of a global fan base. And I think you do get some that you can't watch. Like it'd be kind of like if in the spring, like Baylor football went and played in California, just like as an exhibition game against some, you know, like Baylor played against Ohio State and California just to boost each other's notoriety in that state.
Okay. Gotcha. Yeah. I think part of my logic when I picked the team was the only ones I knew of were like Arsenal and like Chelsea, and that's it. Right.
Yeah. Arsenal and Chelsea are 2 pretty big ones. I'm sure you knew Man United.
Yeah. And so that's why I went the opposite. I didn't want to pick one of those because those are the only ones I really knew about. So what I thought at the time was something that wouldn't be kind of like just a contending team, but maybe not one of the top teams. But I didn't know.
You don't sound like you don't sound so tied to your team. So be careful. You might get Peter Pope coming after you to convert you to the Liverpool side.
So wasn't there a match between Man City and Liverpool like this weekend?
They did. They played for the Champions Shield or the Community Shield. Yeah.
Okay.
Or Charity Shield. It's something Shield that they played for this weekend.
So how did you be a Spurs fan?
I became a Spurs fan because, all right, this is a really stupid answer, but similar to you, I've never wanted to like root for like the Yankees. I never wanted to root for like a front runner. Yeah. And I also didn't want to root for like a bottom feeder. So like, but I also like rooting for something that's like notable. So like there is a community around it. It's not, you know, I didn't want to root for like a small middling club that there aren't other fans that I could interact with. JJ Watt was, I think, the first person I ever saw talk about Spurs on Twitter a long time ago. He tweeted about some match that they were playing. And I remember people were like, oh, JJ, don't be a Spurs fan. And I was like, well, if JJ Watt roots for them, they sound pretty cool. And then there was a YouTube channel I watched in my like early to mid 20s. And on that channel, there was a guy that was from England and he rooted for Tottenham. And he talked about them every once in a while. So I always told myself, like, if I get into the EPL, I will root for Tottenham. And so when I decided I would start watching it a couple years ago, I was like, all right, well, Tottenham's my team. And so that's what I've done ever since. And I love my Spurs.
Good, good. Well, while we're talking about contending teams, in the Big 12 this week, continuing our kind of like preview of contenders, we come across to Oklahoma State. Is next in our list. And I was able to talk to the administrator, owner, runner of the 1012 network.
The boss.
The boss man. But he is the host of the 1012 podcast. Philip Slavin jumped on and had a good conversation about Oklahoma State, what it looks like going forward. And then we kind of talked about other ancillary college football happenings that are going on right now. So why don't we listen to that, and then me and you can jump back on and give our thoughts about Oklahoma State.
Absolutely. I always love hearing Philip's voice.
Absolutely. So we're now joined by Philip Slavin from the 1012 Network. Thank you for jumping on, Philip.
Hey, anytime, man. Anytime.
So I wanted to – we've been kind of going through our previews of the Big 12 teams and mainly spending more time on like who we think are contenders in the Big 12. And this week on our schedule was Oklahoma State. And I figured who better to bring on than yourself to discuss the Cowboys.
You know, I appreciate that. I could probably think of a few people better than me, but you know, I'm happy to do the best I can.
Thank you very much.
I wanted to start. We've got an OSU podcast in the network. Yeah. 45, Cade and Dustin do an incredible job. But happy to hop in here, man. Anytime.
Oh, no problem. Thank you. I think to start with Oklahoma State, I want to start with the quarterback position. We have arguably if you look at the quarterbacks in the Big 12, the best quarterback of the bunch in Spencer Sanders. He was the, you know, all Big 12 first team quarterback preseason. And you look at what he can do and how dynamic he is on the field. But when you watch him play, there is a couple times, at least like every few games, where he does make some questionable decisions. Do you think this year that he can kind of overcome that particular knack that he has and kind of like really cement himself as like the hands down the best quarterback in the league?
I mean, at a certain point, we're talking about a redshirt senior. It's his fourth season as a starting quarterback. It's hard to say like he's going to take another jump. And Oklahoma State needs him to this year if you're going to try and get back to the level this team achieved last year, the hype that achieved last year. He's going to have to take a step up because the defense is going to probably take a step back. Doesn't mean it's going to be a huge step back. It could be a smaller step back. But no matter what, it's taking a step back. We're talking about arguably the third best defense in the country last year, top five for sure.
Yeah.
So to overcome that, yes, your young and oft injured wide receiving core last year is going to be a year older. They should be better. You lose Jalen Warren at running back, who was just fantastic. You lose your two best offensive linemen. There's other things going on that make you look at Spencer Sanders and say, if ever there's a year where you're going to take that next big step and be the guy everyone's kind of been waiting to see, the guy who has had absolute flashes of being just phenomenal, this has to be the year. And technically, he's got 2 years left. But no offense, like fifth year COVID super senior, I don't expect it to come then. Like you've got the same offensive coordinator and the same quarterback coach now since year one, year two. If it's going to happen, it's going to happen. And look, I do think there still needs to be some growth in the offensive coordinator, Casey Dunn, who's been learning on the job. He was a wide receiver coach for like 11 seasons. Can he take that jump is the question. Now, I think he was better last year than he had been in the past. I do think last year was his best season. Everyone's going to point to all the turnovers in the Big 12 championship game. Yeah, he threw too many turnovers last year. He threw like 75% of them against Baylor, both in the regular season game that Oklahoma State was able to win because Baylor's deep offense couldn't do anything, and then the Big 12 championship game where he just continued to do so. And look, at this point, Sanders is going to have a back-breaking cost, probably Oklahoma State the game, performance every year. He does. I'm sorry. He does. I can recount them. I just don't really want to because I don't need to bring that back to mind. He's going to have a game every season where you're just like, okay, here we go. We're going to have multiple turnovers. He's going to make some decisions that confound you. But he can make some amazing plays. He's continued to get better despite everyone saying he's not. I know that his QBR hasn't been awesome. It's been good. It's been solid. But if ever there's a year he's going to take the step forward, it's this year. Like he has got to do it this year. Because if it's not this year, it's not going to be in his fifth year starting super senior. Like it's this year or it's not. He could, but I am at enough with Spencer Sanders at this point where he is who he is until he proves to me otherwise.
Yeah, and he did also lose some key pieces on that side of the ball with Tay Martin and, like you mentioned, Jalen Warren moving on. Do you think, or I should say, for people who aren't as well-versed as far as like the roster, who are some names that may step into those roles and give Spencer Sanders some assistance on that with that offense?
Well, like I said, this was a young receiving core. I mean, last year, you were playing a ton of freshmen and sophomores. You had Tay Martin. Outside of that, everyone else was freshmen, sophomores. It was a very young receiving roster. It was beat up a lot at the beginning of the year. When they went to Boise State, I think they only took like eight receivers, because that's all they had healthy. They had a walk-on kid who caught the pass they had to have to be able to lock that game in over Boise State and get the win. I forget the kid's name. I'm really sorry. Like, they dealt with that a lot. Everyone's a year older. So Brendan Presley, who people know and is very talented. Jaden Bray, who was a freshman last year, I'm very, very excited about. You get Braden Johnson back if he stays healthy. The wide receiving core should be better. That has never been an issue for Oklahoma State. Someone's going to step up and be the guy. We don't know who that's going to be yet, but at this point, the track record for Oklahoma State is there's going to be somebody you're going to be able to rely on who's going to put up a bunch of really good, who's going to put up good stats, who's going to be able to be a reliable target for the quarterback. I'm not sure who that is yet. I would lean towards Jaden Bray. I think that's going to be the guy, but they always have somebody step up. And at this point, until they don't, I'm just going to assume they do. At running back, it's Dominic Richardson is expected to be the starter. Behind him is a very deep running back room, probably the deepest they've had in a very long time. You've got redshirt freshman Jake Nixon, freshman Ollie Gordon. There's depth there. The question is, you're replacing Jalen Warren, who was just phenomenal and a bruiser and could do everything until he just got so beat up that he couldn't. OSU has always had its best seasons when it's had a workhorse back. I assume that will be Dominic Richardson. We will certainly see, but somebody usually does. Offensive line is the big question. You lose Josh Sills and you lose Danny Godlewski. You get back Hunter Woodard, a lot of expectations for him. Have some concerns about whether or not there's another guy expected to start and if whether he's actually going to be able to play this year if he's had a season-ending injury. We haven't had anything confirmed. You brought in Caleb Etienne last year out of JUCO, and he didn't really play much. You brought in Tyrone Weber. The offensive line is going to be the question. They have had to patchwork an offensive line together every year. It's kind of been the weak spot. And they've had some guys step up. Tevin Jenkins 2 years ago was phenomenal. Like I said, Josh Sills was great. Danny Godlewski they brought in from, I think it was Miami of Ohio last year to play center, and he was phenomenal until he got hurt and missed the last few games of the season. Again, Big 12 title game, key injuries that I think cost them the game more than anything else, even Spencer Sanders turnovers. Offensive line is a big question. I like 100 Woodard at right guard. If Caleb Etienne at left tackle is what we thought he could be coming out of JUCO. I think he was the number two ranked JUCO offensive lineman the year he committed to Oklahoma State for what, that'd be 2021. If he can be what we think he can be, what we hope he will be, this offensive line should be pretty solid. With Hunter Woodard at right guard and him at left tackle, and then Preston Wilson should be okay at center. If Caleb Etienne is not, and they have issues at left tackle, Spencer Sanders is going to be running for his life a bit.
Yeah, and you know, you're speaking of like people who left and moved on, or on the defensive side, there's a huge hole in the middle of defense with Malcolm Rodriguez going to the NFL, but also on the sidelines with Jim Knowles moving on to Ohio State. Is the defense going to look any different under Derek Mason? Or do they kind of just say, this is the Oklahoma State defense and kind of fit his scheme to what they want to do? Was there any like schematic changes that you could see on that side of the ball?
And what we're being sold on is this is Oklahoma State's defensive scheme now. And Derek Mason was hired with the understanding that he would be learning and running Oklahoma State's scheme. That's what they're sticking with. That's what they want to do. You mentioned linebacker. Yeah, Malcolm Rodriguez and Devin Harper are both gone to the NFL. It is the biggest hole for this defense. Obviously, they replace like pretty much their entire defensive backfield as well, starting safeties and corners. But linebacker is the bigger issue to me than even safety and corner. You don't replace two guys like Devin Harper and Malcolm Rodriguez easily. Like, they played so many snaps, were so reliable, were such reliable tacklers, and allowed the defense to be as aggressive as they wanted to be. That defense was able to pressure the quarterback on the defensive line and defensive end as much as they wanted, because in large part of how good they were at linebacker. Mason Cobb, Xavier Benson are expected to be the starters there. We'll see how they look. And they're a couple of juniors. There's some older guys. They've got a redshirt senior in Lamont Bishop and a redshirt junior in Nadrian. I'm going to mispronounce his last name, so I'm not even going to try. Sorry. They've got some other guys behind him that are really young. We'll see. I think that's the biggest step back on defense is going to be them. But I think the defensive scheme is going to be the same. That's what they've been selling us, is that Derek Mason was brought in, but he's still going to run what's considered Oklahoma State's defense. I mean, Jim Knowles taught everyone the defense, right? Everyone else on the staff, the defensive coaching staff ran the defense in the bowl game. They are the ones that coached it. So they know this system. They know this scheme. I think that's what they're going to do.
And so just something that me and Joe always did is, or have been doing, is like we look at the Vegas like win total and then kind of give our opinions on that. So I looked at it before, and this is from Vegas Insider, had the win total for Oklahoma State at 8.5. Do you lean more towards the 8 wins or more like the 9+ on that?
I lean the over, and it's primarily based on history. Looking at Mike Gundy's tenure as the head coach at Oklahoma State, when he has brought back a starting quarterback, an established starting quarterback. So that would be 2009, Zach Robinson. You know, he Zach Robinson 2007 back and forth with Reed and a couple of others. 2008, he was the established starter. He returned in 2009. 2011, they went 9-4. 2011, Brandon Whedon, established starter, back again, 12-1. 2013 is a little bit, 2015 was his first year for Mason Rudolph. Okay. He came back in 16 and 17. Those are his established years, 10-3, 10-3. Now, you look at last year, Spencer Sanders, established starter, 12-2. 2020, he was established starter. They went 8-3, but it's a COVID season. You cut it back. Every year they have had an established starting returning quarterback. They have essentially won 9 or more games. 2020 is the exception, but it's a COVID year and you lost 2 non-conference games. It would have been Oregon State and an FCS team. You probably would have won both of those games. So you're looking at probably a 9-10 win season. When Mike Gundy has an established starting quarterback returning, 9 games is essentially the expected minimum. I think 2019, yeah. No, that's right. Because 2019, he came back and they went 8-5. Point is this. I think 9 is the floor. And 9 should be the floor. I don't think that's the ceiling. I think that's what they should expect. I think 9-3 is what you would hope for with a chance at a 10-win season with the bowl game. Now, that could be that they go 8-4 and win the bowl game and get to 9 wins. And I know that doesn't technically count. But that's why I will lean towards the over. 8 could happen. I feel better about 9. 7 doesn't seem right. I know how much they're replacing on this team. Again, the defense, I feel pretty good about the safeties in the corners. I know it's going to have some growing pains. I know the schedule sets up okay for them, but you get all 3 non-conference games at home. Then you get an idle week before you travel to Baylor. I feel good about a 9-win team this year.
Yeah, looking at the schedule, it's like you get those 3 non-cons like you talked about out of week, and then it's like just a straight slog through the Big 12.
Yeah.
No breaks.
Don't appreciate that. Did not appreciate the idle week coming in week 4. I always hate to see that. I would rather see it. I don't ever want an idle week before week 6. That's personally me. I don't know how Gundy feels about that, but I would not ever want my idle week to come before week 6. Like, let me at least play 5 straight games before my week off, because it does. It sets you up for, you play your first 3, you have an idle week, and then you have a 9 straight. It's just also, too many.
It's like you got the team itself, like Central Michigan, Arizona, and UAPB at home before you have to travel to what everyone thinks is probably going to be a good Baylor team. I don't know how good, but I mean, that doesn't really set you up. Like you said, if you had like those 5 games, you kind of more before you head into some of the harder games in the Big 12, you're probably more, you know, the competition is just going to prepare you more for what you're going to face. And looking at it, I thought, well, it's not too bad because you get at Baylor, Texas Tech at home, at TCU, Texas at home. Then it's like at Kansas State. I mean, the thing about it is you get like what we think as a contender, and then maybe a win, you know, what you would presume would be you'd be favored in, and then another contender. Then, I mean, like that stretch where it's like Texas at Kansas State, at Kansas, Iowa State, that's rough.
I mean, yeah, that stretch in the season of Iowa State at OU, West Virginia is not easy.
Yeah.
Doing Texas followed by at Kansas State's not easy. Now, so generally when you, because of course, Big 12 teams, you have rotating seasons between 5 home and 5 road. And so typically you look at that and go, if you've got the 5 road year, it's probably going to be a tough year for you. But Oklahoma State's one of the few lucky teams where their 5 road year includes the road game at Kansas. Now, I know this is a Kansas team that is improving. I'm not going to try and take that game lightly, especially when it's sandwiched between a road game at Kansas State and a home game against Iowa State. But for Oklahoma State, you get the benefit of one of those 5 road games being a road game at Kansas. I know they're a lot better, but it still should be somewhat of a breather for you between Kansas State and Iowa State, in theory. Now, again, I think Kansas is going to be a lot better this year. I think they vastly improved their roster. I think they're going to be, especially on defense, they're going to be a lot better. They loaded up on running backs as well. You know Jalen Daniels should be a good quarterback. Like, they're going to be a better team. But if you can get Kansas as a road game in your 5 road season, that does set you up for slightly higher expectations to me. Plus, you go to TCU, new coaching staff. You go to Kansas, that's night. You go to OU. I know it's later in the season, but new coaching staff. I look at this and say, okay, if I'm just going to go off history, I say 9 wins. They should go 3-0 in non-conference. Central Michigan's going to be an interesting game. It is. Part of that's the history. This is a good Central Michigan team. They were going to return what's probably going to be the guy who ends up with the most rushing yards in college football this year, that starting running back. It's a sneaky, tough game, and Oklahoma State has been starting seasons poorly, slowly, as of the last few years. You get an Arizona State team who they shouldn't be good. That should be an easy win. You get UAPB, you get a week off. That road game at Baylor is going to be a tricky one. But if they can start 4-0, I think they'll start 5-0, and then you should be feeling pretty good with what you get left down the stretch.
Yeah.
At Baylor, Texas at home, at Kansas State, at Oklahoma. Those are the four games to me that are the difference between a 9-3 season and not, or a 10-2 season and not. Can you avoid going 0-4 in those? If you can, it's a 9-win. If not, it could be a rougher year than we think.
Speaking of Arizona State, they are currently in the Pac-12.
For the moment.
Yeah, for the moment. Now, I have seen this is a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes and everything, and I'm not an insider, and so I don't really know what's going on. However, I have seen certain media members get on there and have it almost seems like they're trying to protect the Pac-12, which, you know, that's where they live. So I mean, I don't fault them for that. But you also see other like team reporters who have a different take on it. There's a Arizona 24/7 reporter who kind of has a more, I guess you would call it, pro Big 12 slant to what he's hearing.
Jason Shear.
And he does great work, and especially now. So, I mean, a lot of Big 12 fans are very familiar with his work. But I have seen, I guess you call it Big 12 Twitter now, kind of go at like John Finzano and Wilner and Stuart Mandel and those like. Do you interact with those media members, or what's your tact as far as that goes?
Look, I have a lot of respect for John Wilner. He has for a very long time been very tapped in, and like he was the first one to break the USC UCLA to Big Ten story. He's very tapped in with the Pac-12. He's very attached to Pac-12. I would say this. Same thing with Canzano. It's who do they have relationships with, and who are their sources, and their sources are those who are part of the PR machine that is pro Pac-12. Jason Shear is part of Arizona, who from this point, from what he says, is the one school who very adamantly would like to just join the Big 12 if they could. And I think with Canzano, you're getting a lot of stuff from Oregon State. Obviously, they want the Pac-12 to stay together. And with Wilner, you're getting stuff from the Pac-12 office.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that they're bad reporters or fake. Like, you're going to go where you're going to write based off what your sources are and based off the relationships that you have established, right? So I have a lot of respect for what John Wilner does. But it's all PR. And look, we can say the same thing. I know from a Big 12 side, we all think, like, no, the Big 12 is on the right side here. But we're all PR for the Big 12 as well. And so oftentimes where I try to lean is the truth is somewhere in the middle. And the Pac-12 is not valuable.
Yeah.
But there is I think they're in a tough situation. I mean, I really think they do. I don't think they're getting the numbers they want from ESPN. Fox, they're in the exclusive negotiating window until August 4th, the 30-day window. Fox is not bidding, which is what everybody says. ESPN is, but they're lowballing them because they're not bidding against anybody but themselves.
Yeah.
They could take this to market, and they will. When ESPN's number does not come out the way they want, they will take it to market. And a lot of things that we can't predict can happen there. We know CBS wants to get college football. We know NBC wants more college football. The report about Notre Dame, we're trying to get $75 million a year from Notre Dame or from NBC, and them needing to partner Notre Dame with somebody. But we can't know what any of that's going to be until the Big Ten is done. Because right now, everybody wants the Big Ten. Everybody wants a piece of the Big Ten. And so, because that's the thing that everybody wants. CBS, NBC, that's who they want to get.
Yeah, because the SEC is locked in with ESPN. That's a done deal.
And right now, you know Fox is going to get the most of the Big Ten because they are majority share owners in the Big Ten network.
Yeah.
And they are sitting in the room helping with listening in on the negotiation. How much does ESPN get? Does ESPN get all the rest of the Big Ten and nothing is left for CBS? Because then CBS is going to be a spot where they're going to need some football. They want college football. Does the Pac-12 able to leverage that for themselves to help hold them together to get enough money to stay as a conference? Does NBC not get any of the Big Ten? And so they go to the Pac-12 and they're able to deal it, make a deal. This is where until everyone's talking about August 4th, and I do think that date matters a lot, but until the Big Ten's TV new contract is locked in and announced, and we know who's getting what of the Big Ten, this isn't going to be decided. I really don't think it will. I think the Pac-12 ADs and presidents, the presidents primarily, because they're the ones who make these decisions. The ADs, yeah. The Pac-12 presidents would rather stay together.
Yeah.
Right. We can tell them that they're in a doomed relationship all we want. They would rather stay together for the same arrogant reasons they didn't want any of the Big 12 schools to join the Pac-12 before. They're very focused on academics and a very high level of that, and they hold that very respectively. And so bringing in schools that don't value that and value football more than they do academics, and it's just from a sports standpoint, they don't want that. Now, will some of them come to the Big 12 if that's the only option that they have? Will they hold their nose and do it? Yeah. But right now, I know we're all talking about August 4th, and it is a big date because we'll find out if the Pac-12 is signed a deal with ESPN and is holding it together or is taking their media rights to market. I think they're going to end up taking their media rights to market. And the question then becomes, what happens with CBS and NBC? Because if CBS and NBC end up with chunks of the Big Ten, then there's less to go around, and the Pac-12 is basically stuck with whatever ESPN is going to give them.
Yeah.
Or CBS and NBC don't want any of the Pac-12 because they're not going to bid anything for it either, and they'd rather have the Big 12. So the Pac-12 could stay together. So anybody saying that it's not going to happen, those teams are leaving, it's never going to happen. And I know what Kevin Warren said at Big Ten Media Days, and it doesn't help the Pac-12 in any way, shape, or form.
That's what I wanted to ask you about. I mean, what do you think his reasoning was for that? Because like you said, he is in the room with Fox, and he just dropped, essentially, according to like that Dennis Dodd report, I guess it was out today, that, they're still looking like Oregon, Washington, Stanford, and Cal as options. Why would you say that? Okay. Yes.
Here's my opinion. Stanford, Cal. Stanford makes a lot of sense in the Big Ten. Mm-hmm. So does Oregon, Washington, Cal. They could, if you add store at Stanford, you're probably going to have to add Cal. They're almost going to be a package deal. Oregon and Washington. The problem with those schools is they will make the pie slices for everyone else in the Big Ten smaller. They will not make the pie slices grow like USC and UCLA will. They will make them smaller. So for the Big Ten to consider adding those schools, and I think that they see a benefit long term in adding a West Coast wing and adding those schools, I think they see the value in that. As there's a really good Sportico article about what Kevin Warren's been doing in the Big Ten and growing the Big Ten as a brand, not Ohio State, not Michigan, the name, the Big Ten, the conference itself, and making it a national brand, right? Just like the SEC is. Everybody knows what the SEC is. You say the SEC, everybody knows. It's not just Alabama or Georgia or Florida. It is the SEC. That is what Kevin Warren has been doing with the Big Ten. It's not just Ohio State and Michigan. It is the Big Ten. And they are growing that brand nationally. And there's benefit long-term in adding more West Coast schools. But those schools individually do not make the slices of pie bigger. So if they're going to bring those schools in, they're not going to get a full share of the revenue. They're going to have to take a smaller percentage. And so while Stanford and Cal and Oregon and Washington may want to go to the Big Ten, that's not what they want. They want full share. They want to get the full slab. So right now, there's almost a standoff between the Big 12, the Pac-12, and the Big 10 about who's going to end up winning this thing. Maybe the Pac-12 does stay together. They could. They could come away and saying, this is the best option for all of us. This is how we're going to get the most money. Some of them could end up in the Big 10 because they agreed to a smaller slice of the pie to make everybody else in the conference happy. And that pie slice of pie for those current Pac-12 schools is still bigger than what they would get staying in the Pac-12 together. Because in theory, even at a reduced rate, they could still be getting more in the Big 10 than they would be in the Pac-12.
Yeah, I think.
Or
they would be. If you believe the numbers that are out there.
Yeah. Well, but at this point, it's going to be the same negotiating thing as how small a slice can a big team give them and get them in there, right?
Yeah.
Like we're not gonna overbid for you. So how much do we have to give you to get you in? If this is what the ESPN's telling you you'll get, well, we'll give you a little bit more if you come join us.
Yeah.
Or how much is the Big 12 going to offer those schools? Okay, well, if we really want you, that's above our price that we want to pay, or it's not, we'll go a little bit above them and bring you in. I think that's where this is. I think that's kind of the standoff that is currently going, is until everyone knows all the numbers and what is actually available, no one's making any decisions, which is smart. You shouldn't make a decision this big without all the information available to you. So until the Big Ten's media deal is done, and it is, I saw an article today that said it's expected it by Labor Day, which is, you know, the week one of the season,
which
is why I don't expect a lot of stuff to happen quickly. I just don't think it will. I think this stuff is going to take a little while, but this is how it happens. Things move quick because they move quick to us because we find out about big things quickly. But OU and Texas, it happened quickly. It had been happening slowly for months. We found out about it. It was a big deal. Everything's got to move fast, right? Same thing here. We found out about UCC, UCLA. This is going to go crazy. What's going to happen? We have things slow back down. They take time to develop. It could be September. It could be August when we find something out. It could be after the season.
Yeah, I was listening to a podcast today, the Cover 2 podcast, and Braden Gall kind of said the same thing. He was like, you have like three players at a poker table where you have the Big 12, the Pac-12, and then the Big 10 kind of looking at their cards. But I did find it interesting that what he said about that, regarding the Pac-12, Kevin Warren also had positive remarks about the incoming Big 12 commissioner, Brett Yormark, which it makes me think like I'm sure there's back channel conversations going on, because all these, like Yormark's closely tied to Fox Sports as well, just based on his previous jobs. And how orchestrated is this from, or how involved are like the media partners with these types of decisions?
Who gets invited, who doesn't. Fox and ESPN are very much involved. Like they are. I don't think to every single thing, but they are involved, because you want to know, okay, if we add this school, how much more do we get? Right.
Yeah.
That's part of the negotiation. I know from a Big 12 side, you want to be like, aha, Big 10.
Yeah.
Big 10 just had an alliance with the Pac-12 and the ACC and shot the Pac-12 in the back, and will shoot the ACC in the back as soon as they can. Like, I'm not taking any sort of like nice things from Kevin Warren to help me out here. Again, the Pac-12 falls apart and they want some of the schools. They want to get them at a good rate. At this point, this is it. Everybody wants, I think the Big Ten, the Pac-12, they all want them on the cheap. ESPN wants them for cheap. And I don't think the Pac-12 survives. I don't.
Yeah.
But I could be wrong, and I'm fine with that. Because like I said, they could stay together. They really could. They could make enough money to make everybody happy that they make the decision from an academic standpoint. Because this is not decided by fans and coaches and ADs. It's decided by school presidents.
Yeah.
But they all stick together. But if Jason Shear is right, and Arizona is as actively ready to move as possible, like it may be as simple as Arizona convinces one other school to join them, and it all falls apart. Because we can talk about Oregon, Washington leaving, and it doesn't hold together. If two more schools leave, you're done. Because right now you're worried about adding San Diego State and Fresno State or SMU just to try and bolster. And those aren't great options.
Yeah. Honestly,
to get back to 12. When you drop to 8 and you need 2 to get to 10? Like it's done.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Yeah. And honestly, if you could make the argument, like if one goes, like if Arizona did go, the rest are going to follow somewhere. The dominoes are going to start to fall, whether it's the Big Ten or you're stuck with bad choices. Like you're talking about, like who you're going to invite to take those like essentially three spots now.
Yeah. I don't think San Diego State is a bad ad. They just don't bring the TV value.
Yeah.
And like when we're talking about Big 12 candidates, I had San Diego State fans up in my 10-12 network mentions. I was like, us versus Boise State. And I'm just like, I don't care. I don't want to stretch to California. Like I don't want to need to be in a conference that stretches from Orlando to California.
No.
Give me the corner four or two. I don't care. The Big 12 doesn't have to add four of those. If you told me you were bringing in Arizona and one other school, Utah, okay. Arizona and Colorado, fine. Arizona and Arizona State, that's it. Okay. Like, I from a fan standpoint, like, okay, that puts us to 14. We have to get 16. Do we? Like, the strength in numbers, like adding four more, you get to 16, and you are now locking yourself in as the third conference behind the Big Ten and the SEC. And there's value in that. And I think that's really for the Big 12. It's not just about adding more schools. It's tearing apart another conference. And now it's you versus the ACC. When the ACC's grant of rights come up. For who's going to be number, yeah. Who's going to be left standing as number three. And the problem for the ACC is you already know the Big Ten and the SEC are coming. Like they're going to want Virginia, Virginia Tech, North Carolina. Like they're going to want those schools. We can talk about Florida State, Miami. Maybe Clemson. They want to add those.
Clemson for sure.
Clemson, yeah. All the Florida State, Miami stuff. Like Florida State, probably. Miami's not as good a spot. Miami's closer to like the Oregon in this situation than they are the USC, UCLA, OU, Texas.
Yeah.
That's the reality. But North Carolina is a very valuable program. I was listening to I was listening to Andy Staples' show, and he played a sound clip from like the former North Carolina president from he had been on a radio show. And basically, when Missouri joined, remember when Missouri joined the SEC? Yeah. And Missouri got to join the SEC because North Carolina essentially said no. Missouri could still be in the Big 12 right now had North Carolina decided they wanted to go to the SEC instead of staying in the ACC.
Which would have made way more sense.
Oh, way more sense. Way more sense than Missouri. Because it would have been A&M and North Carolina, not Missouri, which is hilarious to me and would have made more sense for Missouri to still be in the Big 12, but that's aside the point. No, like the ACC is going to get raided.
Yeah.
And that's where if you're the Big 12, and I'm sorry, this is ruthless, but if you can tear apart the Pac-12, you can tear apart enough of what you want from the ACC and get 220 teams when everyone else does as well and lock yourself. You're going to need a rebrand. Sorry. I know it's expensive to not be the Big 12 name or whatever. I do think if you get four more schools, it's time for a rebrand. Like
I think your Mark's going to like, he's probably would be on board or leading that for if you get those additional schools to rebrand. Cause this whole thing was we're going to, you know, be quote unquote like hipper and younger, whatever that means. But
that's one thing. And I will talk about this on my show. Cause I want to. I know saying hipper and younger and cooler is a stupid thing to say. Like I can both laugh at the verbiage and understand what he's saying.
Absolutely.
And I'm coming around on the new theory here that, especially after reading the Sportico article about Kevin Warren, like again, the SEC, the conference is the name is a brand. It's a bigger brand than any of the schools. The SEC is a bigger brand than just Alabama. Warren is turning the Big Ten into a bigger brand than Michigan and Ohio State.
Yeah.
It's when he says younger and hipper cooler, you look at those brands. What do those brands represent? If you want to be the third conference, the one thing the Big 12 has not done a great job of is creating a brand identity around the Big 12. For all the crap we don't like about what's his name at The Athletic has to say about Andy Staples and all them about Big 12 not having history, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
The conference does brand, the name of the Big 12 does not have the brand power on its own that the Pac-12 has from being together the way they were for the Lions as the Big Ten, as the SEC. There is brand power, but it doesn't have the same level of brand power, and brand power matters. If your mark can do similar to for the Big 12, what Warren has done for the Big 10, then you can establish yourself as the third conference because you can raise your brand value as a conference name above what the ACC is. Because the ACC's got an identity problem of whether or not it wants to be a basketball conference or a football conference.
Yeah, I was listening to another podcast. I can't remember what it was, but it's kind of the same thing. Like they're kind of split. Like what our identity, like you could say like Big 12. I think it was SZD I was listening to, and they were saying how the Big 12, they're football crazy, but it's a basketball or Richard Johnson saying it's a basketball conference.
Yeah. Richard Johnson's an SEC homer. And I like Richard Johnson, but Richard Johnson is a SEC homer. He just is. Doesn't have a ton of respect for the Big 12. Like, and yeah. I get the the brand and the conference itself. But like, yeah, look, the Big 12 is the best basketball conference.
Yeah, I think Stephen Godfrey said, like, yes, it's like they're strong in basketball, but they make decisions with football in mind.
Yes. And that is the right thing to do. And one of the things that the Big 12 has on the Pac-12 is there, you can say what you want. There is no argument that the Pac-12 as a conference cares more about football than the Big 12 does. We have the state of Texas in the Big 12. The state of Texas cares far more about football than the state of California does. It's just the reality. Okay. It's just how it is. Than the state of Arizona does. Now, I think the Arizona schools and Utah are more like Big 12 schools in their passion for football than they are any of the literally, we're having people have conversations about Cal may just in 5 years, if it falls apart, just drops athletics because they probably wouldn't care if they did. Like, that's literally one of the schools. And so your two of your brands who care the most about football, and USC can't even fill their stadium right now, are leaving. Like, I think Oregon cares. I think Washington cares. I think the four corner schools care, but it's not the same. If your primary like recruiting state isn't avid, ardent football fans, your conference's fan base is inferior. And that's just how the Pac-12 has been for a long time. There's no arguing. Everyone will say the same thing. Like, Big 12 fans care more. They may not have as big of alumni bases, but they may not recruit as well, but I don't care. Like, they care more. And if you can build the brand of the Big 12 around football and also be the best basketball conference in the country, sweet.
Yeah, I really feel for like Washington State, because I know they do care about football.
Oh, I hate Washington State and Oregon State are right now facing the harsh reality that we were talking about for Kansas State and Iowa State last year. And I think they are a much higher doom level than Iowa State and Kansas State were, because they do not have an out. The Big 12 is not interested. The Big 10, like, they do not have another out. And I hate that for them.
I hate it, because it's like you're gonna end up like Washington State, Mountain Oregon West. State are gonna be in the Mountain West. And that's just, or like
some whatever. I hate it. I absolutely hate it for those schools and fan bases. I like Oregon State. It's OSU cousin. It's orange and black with a former star quarterback who came back to be the head coach and create a fun offense. Like, it's literally OSU. And so I hate it. I have nothing against Washington State. Like, I hate them. Like, I don't care for Cal. They don't care. I don't care for Stanford, because to some extent they don't care. But I hate it for Oregon State and Washington State, because those are the two who are the most screwed. And I think those are two of the ones who you're hearing the most ardent pro Pac-12 PR voices from.
Yeah, because
it's for good reason.
Yeah,
it's it for them.
Yeah, for them, it's like if the Pac-12 doesn't stay together, they're going to they're just be left out, and they're going to be knocked down. Either you're going to have this weird mix of the former Pac-12 teams and some Mountain West schools kind of going together to form a new conference, or you're just going to be full on like in the Mountain West.
I mean, they're going to be in the they're going to be in the Mountain West.
Yeah.
And like I said, I hate that for them. Now, I think both would show up in the Mountain West and be really good right away, but I would hate that for both of those schools. But the reality, I think, long-term for both of those schools, I don't know what the future of college football is.
Yeah.
Something, it's two 2024, 2016 conferences. Maybe it's three conferences of 20. We have 60 teams. Everybody used to be like, well, 230 something. I was like, I don't know what it is. But there are teams in Power Five right now who are going to get left out of whatever that future is. Yeah. And I hate that for them. And I do. And I hate that reality is going to come sooner for some than others. I thought it was going to come for some Big 12 teams last year. I think we all did. I think it's about the conference in Pac-12 schools. And maybe it won't. Like I said, maybe they stick together and put a Band-Aid on it and keep trucking along until the future arrives that's coming. But I think that future is more inevitable for the Pac-12 than it is for the Big 12 right now.
Right, Phil, thanks for hopping on. And talking, so we started off as Oklahoma State, then we kind of delved into realignment, whatever you want to call it. Where can people find you if they want to get more of your content and in other podcasts that's in your network?
Yeah, we call it conference consolidation. That feels like a better name for it than realignment at this point. Yeah. It's no longer shuffling deck chairs. It's now, cutting off limbs. Of course, I am the host of the 1012 podcast. We are the flagship show of the 1012 network. We are a network of podcasts who all love to cover the Big 12. We are 10 shows strong for now. You can find every show on the network at 1012network.com, T-E-N, the number 12, the word network.com. You can find links to every single show. Of course, you can follow us on Twitter at 1012 Network. We talk all sorts of Big 12. We talk about the four teams that are incoming because, I mean, we're basically engaged. We're just waiting to walk down the aisle and kiss and make it official before we're officially married. So just treating them like part of the family already.
All right. Yeah. Everyone go out and follow Philip. Again, thanks for hopping on and just talking about Big 12 football.
Anytime, Matt. Anytime.
Thanks. And again, we want to thank Philip for jumping on. He's always gracious with his time, and people should go and listen to his podcast as well.
Yeah, 1012 podcast and the entire 1012 network for that matter. He's done just an excellent job of curating media content for the Big 12 as a whole. And that's one thing I appreciate, the guys that recognize the coolness that we have with this like little group in the conference and have really enjoyed and grown up with the Big 12, that really like it as a conference and don't treat it like we've seen some Pac-12 media members treat it recently. But
sure.
A huge just thanks to Philip, man, like for not just for coming onto the podcast, but for everything that he does for Big 12 schools in general.
Absolutely. I mean, your mileage may vary about the Between Two Bears, but you know, that's neither here nor there. But talking about Oklahoma State, I believe their win total, kind of what we did with the previous schools with TCU and Texas Tech, kind of give our thoughts on what the Vegas number is and what we kind of think of looking at their schedule. They are at like 8.5 was the win total over under. And what do you think about that number specifically?
Well, Phillip said he's taking the over, correct?
Yes.
And I have to agree with him there on an 8.5. I think this is a really, really talented team. As you guys talked about, they have a very, very strong starting quarterback. I know a lot of people like to make fun of Spencer Sanders, but Phillip brought up like a really good point in there that the majority of bad things that happen to Spencer Sanders happen when he plays Baylor. And it's one of those things where I think Baylor's defense figures him out and he struggles against Baylor's defense specifically. But other than that, I think he's a solid quarterback. And at the end of the year, he may be the best quarterback in the Big 12. And I think he was first team last year, wasn't he?
I believe so.
Yeah. So he was voted as the best quarterback in the conference last year. I think Dylan Gabriel,
he's preseason first team this year.
So, I mean, everybody looks at him as the best. I don't necessarily disagree with that. I think if he had to play Baylor 12 times, then he'd be in trouble, but he doesn't. He has to play Baylor once. And we'll see. Maybe he'll even be better than last year. But overall, I think if you're telling me that I have to find 9 wins in their schedule, similar to what we talked about last week with like TCU and Texas Tech, it's not that I think they're bad. It's just when I look at their schedule, I struggle to find a certain number of wins. I can find 9 on Oklahoma State's schedule.
Yeah. And I mean, Philip brought up a good point with talking about Spencer Sanders. Like he's eventually, I mean, he's a 6-year senior, you know, he has a COVID year that he's in this year. And at this point, like he kind of is what he is. I mean, he's not going to become leaps and bounds a better quarterback or what a lot of Oklahoma State fans want him to become or want him to be, but he doesn't have to be. You know, he just needs to tweak it a little bit. And like you were talking about, I mean, for the most part, he played great. I mean, he will occasionally make a, you know, judge in decision making, or he'll make a poor decision. But at the same time, he, you know, they put together wins. So, and I think just almost by default, he's the best quarterback because there's such a weird issue with the Big 12 quarterbacks where there's so many new quarterbacks, so many transfers in this era of the transfer portal. You have a guy that's been there for, like I said, going, you know, he's a 6-year senior. So the stability and the is just there to just put all your chips behind Spencer Sanders as far as that goes.
Yeah. And I think Oklahoma, Oklahoma as a state in the Big 12 is going to be where we see that first team quarterback come out. I think the biggest challenger to Spencer Sanders to be like the first team quarterback at the end of the year is going to be Dylan Gabriel at Oklahoma, because I think under Lebby, he's going to put up tons of, he's going to put up huge numbers. So, and but we'll get into that when we talk about OU. So I agree with Philip. Like, just, we can do a quick rundown on their schedule because it's a good schedule, yeah, but
just the way it is,
the level of play that I think Oklahoma State, or I expect out of Oklahoma State, I think even though they lost Jim Knowles as their defensive coordinator, I think they're still going to be solid there. And Gundy is one of, you know, if not the best coach in the Big 12 right now. I know a lot of people will yell that it's Aranda, but Aranda's only been around for 2 seasons. Like, Gundy's been doing this for a very long time. And you even think about last year, where before the Baylor game, they had one convincing win, which was against Kansas State, their first conference game. But their three non-cons last year, they did not look great. They barely beat Missouri State. They should have lost to Boise. And then who was their other one? Yeah, they barely beat Tulsa. Yeah,
that was a close game.
So they were 3-0 going into the Kansas State game, which they won handily 31-20, which was right before they played Baylor. But I think it shows really good how good Gundy is that he was finding his identity at the beginning of that year, and he was able to pull the wins out where he needed to. He went on the road and he won at Boise. That's nothing to sneeze at. And then they really found their stride once they got into conference play. And I don't think it'll be any different this year. So looking at their schedule this year, they start off against Central Michigan. Again, I think like that might be a game where, similar to last year against Missouri State, it's like a close one. And was Central Michigan the team that stole a win from them a couple of years ago?
Yeah. With the
officiating.
Yeah.
I don't see them losing this game, even if they have like a slow start to the year. So they're going to win that one. Then they play Arizona State, and
who won't be good.
Really. I don't see Arizona State walking into Boone Pickens and winning a football game. So that's 2-0. And then you've got Arkansas Pine Bluff. So that's your walk in the park game. You're starting off 3-0. Here's where the issue lies, and that's their off week comes in week 4, as Philip talked about. It's super early, so now you've got a run of games. They start conference play in Waco. Honestly, again, I think this is, I don't know yet. I look at this and I, on the surface, with what the expectation of what these two teams are this year, I think Baylor wins the game. I still have like a lot of I don't knows about Baylor though. And, but I will give Baylor the win here. So now you're 3-1. You got Tech at home. I think you and I both agree, Oklahoma State can take Tech.
Yeah.
Okay. On the road at TCU, I think you and I would both take that as a win.
Yeah.
Okay. So now you're 5-1. Then Texas at home. I think you and I are both probably picking Texas in that one.
Yeah.
Or I mean, Oklahoma State, sorry.
Oklahoma State, yeah.
Yeah.
That's their homecoming game too.
Right. So now you're 6-1. Then you've got at Kansas State. I'm taking this as a sneaky loss.
This is like a 50-50 game.
Right. And I'm going to take it as a loss. It's in Bill Snyder Stadium. It's going to be, Kansas State's going to make this like a slog fest game. And I think they'll just pull it out by a field goal or something.
So now you're 6-1. Watch Kansas State this year.
They're going to be interesting.
Because I just don't know what the offense is going to look like, because you really don't know what.
They got what's his name from Nebraska.
Yeah, I got Adrian Martinez, and then Colin Klein's.
Yeah, Colin Klein's calling the offense.
And so, I remember like 2011 Colin Klein when they were like number one or two in the country. I mean, when Baylor upset him, but we won't talk about that. But, you know, Colin Klein was kind of like, we ran midline, we ran quarterback option. I mean, that's what he did.
Yeah. I'm stoked to see them too. And I think they're going to be dangerous and scary. I don't want nothing to do with Kansas State. So yeah, I'll take them to beat Oklahoma State. So now you're 6-2. Then you've got at Kansas. Matt, you and I both agree that's a win.
Well, I have some thoughts about this.
Okay.
So let's say the next game.
Next game is Iowa State.
Okay. So on the solid verbal, they have this thing called let down, look ahead sandwich, right? So
they're not going to be looking ahead.
Listen, no, but look, you have, if you have a letdown loss at Kansas State, and then following Kansas, you have Iowa State, which would be a look ahead. That's a, that should be a big game. You may overlook Kansas and they should be improved. So there's potential. I'm not saying the will, but said there's potential that if Oklahoma State isn't locked in on having on the team that's in front of you, Kansas may catch you. That's all I'm saying.
Not this Kansas. Not this Kansas. Yeah, so I'm taking this as a win. All right. So now you're okay. What you're 7-2 with three games left. You've got Iowa State. They lost to Iowa State last year on the road. This game's not at Jack Trice. It's at Boone Pickens. Oklahoma State avenges the loss last year, wins. Now you've got eight wins with at Oklahoma and West Virginia at home left. I think they drop Bedlam and, yeah, and win the West Virginia game. Boom, 9-3. And I think that's an absolutely reasonable look at their schedule.
I agree. And I think Oklahoma, I think even the players that are left from that team last year, they're going to really want revenge because to them, they don't lose to Oklahoma State, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's going to be a hard win for the Cowboys, especially since it's, you know, at Oklahoma in Norman. So,
yeah, it's at Oklahoma. It's Venable's first bedlam as a head coach. It's, yeah, you know, what has been a largely defensive-minded Oklahoma State team over the last year or two against Jeff Lebby, new quarterback versus the oldest quarterback in the conference. So yeah, there's a lot of really interesting storylines. And I mean, just for the fact it's Bedlam, it's an interesting storyline, but
yeah,
I think Oklahoma pulls that one out.
And then West Virginia, I think I agree with you. They can beat West Virginia. That's a big, they're a big question mark. So I don't know what exactly West Virginia is going to be. So yeah, I think 9-3 is where I would slot them for sure.
Yeah. Agreed. So I think you got a 9-3 team in here that will be at the top of the conference and will be in the running to be one of the teams that can make the conference title game. I think Oklahoma State has a shot at that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's just some question marks. You know, they lost some players, skill players on the offensive side of the ball, lost a lot of right in the middle of the defense on the defense side of the ball, plus the defense coordinator. Gundy has said, you know, they run that defense is the Oklahoma State defense. We'll see how that plays out with Derek Mason coming in, having his own scheme. So how much of that defense carries over from last year that Jim Knowles installed and kind of built with Derek Mason, who has kind of a different outlook, but Gundy says they're going to run it. So we'll see how that plays out.
Yeah, I trust Gundy. I think he's a great coach. And so I don't sense much drop off because he's been consistent, and I'm going to believe he will continue to be consistent.
So me and Philip also kind of talked about college football, you know, kind of the things that are going on outside of college football with like realignment, consolidation, whatever you want to call it. When we had that conversation, we just had the Big Ten media day where Kevin Warren came out and said that, you know, they're still looking at expansion. And I guess there was a report from Dennis Dodd, or I think Brett McMurphy also reported this, that they're looking at Oregon, Washington, Stanford, and Cal were some of the names mentioned out of the Pac-12 right before Pac-12 media days. And whenever the Pac-12 is kind of all a little bit on shaky ground. So we kind of had this conversation about, why would you say that if not just to seed doubt within the conference, then that conference, the Pac-12. And I kind of went to conspiracy theories of like, is like Fox trying to like destabilize the Pac-12? So what are your thoughts on just that particular aspect of the Big Ten and how they're functioning in college football as a whole.
So I think overall, a lot of what we saw at Media Days was theater. And especially from the Pac-12 side of things, if you're the Pac-12 right now, you have to look as valuable as possible to every single TV network that's out there. You want people on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram, wherever it may be, in print media, on all the outlets, using the word Pac-12, like saying that phrase over and over again, talking about what the Pac-12 is saying. And I think a little bit of what their conference commissioner did when he came out, I think he mentioned the Big 12 12 times, I want to say, is in his like little opening number. Yeah. And he talked about the Big 12 was actively trying to destabilize the Pac-12. And he mentioned that he's got text messages that of Big 12 administrators tampering and stuff like that. And to me, a lot of it, it's almost like professional wrestling in a way, where he's out here and he's like calling somebody out. He's giving the media as many lines and headlines, like easy one-liner quotes that they can put out there that are going to drive clicks and are going to get people talking to make the Pac-12 look as valuable as possible. I think that's a lot of what's going on here.
Yeah. And he, because the thing is, the Pac-12, they still don't have a new deal.
No. And they had their little 30-day window where they were trying to investigate what. Thursday. Yeah, it's almost up. And they're basically investigating what their value is so that they could see, you know, schools could decide like, hey, yeah, this actually seems pretty good. We'll stick around. And the rumor is, I have not seen this confirmed anywhere. I think it was just, I want to say I've only seen one person actually like be the original source. It was some person on Twitter that claimed that the offer they got from ESPN was $25 million per school, which is so bad.
Jason Shear said that his sources are telling me that number. He's a 24/7 Arizona 24/7 beat reporter.
Okay.
And he said sources close to him say it was $24.5 million per school from ESPN, which is extremely low.
Yeah, that's bad.
Yeah. So there's been other people that like Dennis Dodd has said that his sources say it could be anywhere between 21 and 30, which is I think still like 30 max, which is still not good.
Right. And then the other side of that coin is there's also rumors that are saying Oregon and Washington would demand a non-equal revenue share, meaning they would get a larger piece of the pie because of their value to the conference. And then that would mean that, let's say, if it's $25 million per school, that's an average. And then, but you've got Oregon and Washington trying to take 30 to 40 million. You know,
yeah, so you're gonna give,
do the other schools agree to that? That's even less.
And then what, like 21 and 19, 20.
Could you even get Oregon and Washington to sign a grant of rights right now? And well, that's meaning the whole thing. That could you lock him into this?
It's also been reported after Pac-12 Media Days, we didn't get to discuss this with Philip, but like reportedly Washington and Oregon would only sign like a short-term media rights deal. Like you're talking 3 or 4 years, you know,
right. Which is in line with some of the other stuff we've heard that the Big Ten may sit pat for 2, 3, 4 years trying to figure out what Notre Dame is going to do.
Which if you're the other schools, why would you agree to that? Especially if you unequal revenue share, plus it's a short-term deal.
Exactly. And if ESPN I'm Washington or if I'm Oregon, especially, I don't think I would sign any grant of rights. I would, because I would just be like, look, I'm year to year. Be happy with me while you've got me.
Yeah.
Because even if Oregon decided to go independent at the end of this current Pac-12 deal, they would get a schedule that would matter and somebody would pay to put them on TV.
But that leads you to, if you go down that path, so if I'm Arizona or Colorado or any of these other schools, I want stability and like, because I see where everything's going. And so if Oregon's not going to sign and they're going to go be year to year, do it their own thing, at any time they could leave. And then if one team leaves, the whole thing crumbles. Right. So why would the other schools agree to that? in any way.
I don't see them at all doing it. And it's so interesting because everybody's making these assumptions that, okay, well, inevitably Stanford, Cal, Washington, Oregon are going to be in the Big Ten. Like that's, people feel like it's this inevitability that that's going to occur. And then on the other side of the coin, like people feel like that, you know, Clemson, Florida State, and some other mix of schools out there are going to end up in the SEC. There's all of these assumptions that are going to happen. And I don't like it. They make sense, but I think that there's so many unknowns out there right now. I just could not tell you what I think is going to happen. And I don't think the Pac-12 and the individual schools in there have any idea what they want to do or what's going to happen. And
yeah,
you know, we've talked about this and you'll see, I've seen it on Twitter a bunch and Philip talks about it. There is such a small number of people that actually know what's going on, that it's tough to really believe anything, because you're talking about presidents, boards of regents, and maybe athletic directors that are in the know, and that's it. So it's hard for beat writers to get information out of those groups. Yeah, so I don't know.
Speaking of Jason Scheer from the Arizona 24/7 site, he tweeted today that none of the Pac-12 presidents or athletic directors expects a deal this week. So like a media deal, which he says isn't surprising. However, we've heard sources' expectation is that the deal might even come this year. Can you see them waiting into 2023 before they have a deal, or lasting until 2023? Those other schools, any school.
I think that might be, that's the best short-term thing for the Pac-12, I think. Because I think it's, everybody's in this standoff right now where they're all just staring at each other. And if they have the opportunity to just do nothing, I think most of them are going to pick do nothing and then react when it's, you know, take as much time as you possibly can to react. And I think the Big 12 had this big advantage where we got the Texas Oklahoma announcement 5 years ahead of time. So we all kind of had our group freak out moment and our individual attempts to jump ship. And then we realized like, okay, we have at least a few years of stability that we can like learn to like each other, see if we can fix this together. The Pac-12 doesn't have that length, but having another full year, I think is, you know, they can all take a breath and just stare at each other and then act when they're forced to act.
Nothing is good for the Pac-12 at this point, because mainly because this happened to the Big 12 last year. So like any viable teams to add are were taken, you know?
Right. And this is weird to say, but we had an advantage in that our two premier schools got taken and we didn't have another two.
Yeah.
You know, we've got a group of, let's be honest, like there's very passionate and some have large fan bases, but on a national scale, the brands that are left are kind of mid-tier brands. That's just the way it is. We're Oklahoma State and even Kansas and Baylor and Tech. We're not Texas when it comes to a brand. Just not. But Oregon matters. People like the Duck and people know their attachment to Nike. And still having Oregon in the Pac-12 made them feel so much less stable than we were able to feel.
Yeah, because you know, and I think they all know, it's been reported that Oregon, Washington reached out to the Big Ten right after USC and UCLA left, or they announced they left. So, you know, they're not going to be in it for the long haul at the Pac-12. You know, as soon as anyone really, they're looking for the Big Ten because that's the most logical to pair with those other Southern schools. But if the Big Ten called tomorrow, they would leave.
Yeah. And I think,
and I don't blame them.
I think Oregon and Washington on the whole are similar to the answer that everybody provided in our roundtable we did a few weeks back, where every single one of us said our preference is a stable Big 12.
Yes.
And I think even if you asked Washington and Oregon today, if they got guarantees of stability in the Pac-12, I think they might stay over going to the Big 10. But that, I don't think that there's no way to guarantee that Pac-12 stability right now. So
no, especially like with the number that low. Fox just passed. We don't want to like bid. We're not going to bid with ESPN. You know, you can have it, basically what they said. And if the number's as low as what we think is going to be, and they go to market, I don't know if that number gets better.
Right, because if I'm Fox or I'm CBS or I'm NBC and ESPN has only offered 25, maybe I decide like, okay, hey, I can buy low and get a product that is worth it and I'll go offer 30.
Yeah.
But that's still not good. Because I think the estimates are like what the Big 12 would be 40.
Yeah. I mean, and upwards towards like 50 and 60 as the years progress in that media deal, right?
And, you know, I know that's a lot of money. It's still not the 100 that we're hearing that's possible for the Big Ten and SEC, but 25 is so low.
And to go back to what I said about Oregon, about how they're leaving a heartbeat. And I don't blame them for that. If the SEC called Baylor and wanted to invite Baylor and TCU or Baylor and Texas Tech and whoever else that they see, I would hope Baylor would be like, yes, absolutely, we're leaving.
Yeah, you have to say yes to that. You have to. As a fan, I would be like, well, I'm not going to lie. Like, I'd be like, we made it. But
at the same time,
I would miss the people we would leave behind. I legitimately would.
Yeah, especially if
you have to answer that phone and you have to say yes. If the Big Ten called and said, hey, come join the Big Ten, we want a presence in Texas, you say yes. You don't say no. You have to.
Yeah. And outside of that, for the Big 12 schools, all of them, to remain relevant, if they're not going to get invites to the Big Ten or the SEC, then you have to make your conference the third best conference.
Yeah. You have to hoard the viable teams, you know, not the front runners, but the historically that have had years pop up where you're like, huh, yeah, it's viable that team could win it all this year. You know, that's what this conference has to be. And I think we've got what we need out of there. We need a little bit more to boost ourselves, I think. At the end of the day, what would be interesting is to find out if it's 25 is the average we're talking about in the Pac-12 that ESPN offered them. And that includes the assumed viewership and money that Oregon and Washington would bring in.
Yeah.
That tells me, like, if I'm ESPN, I'm probably weighting Oregon and Washington higher than Arizona. So Arizona to ESPN isn't worth $25 million. So is it worth it to the Big 12 to bring them on? Like, there's going to be questions like that. There's going to be, if we add this team to our Big 12 group, are they a money driver? Or is it just adding another just equal slice to the pie? Or is it adding a piece to the pie that's going to take away money from everybody else?
Well, I've seen this floated out there. And one selling point, like if you do add like the, what people are, you know, the four corner schools, right? At a bare minimum, you could say, listen, we can fill time slots for every single time slot. We can have games.
Yeah, that's fair.
From the noon kickoff game all the way until the after dark game, we can have teams playing. So for a media partner, you could say, you know, part of the value is you need content. We have content the whole day. And you can add in, if they agree, like, you know what, we can have a Thursday night game, a Friday night game, and every single time slot window on Saturday.
Yeah, that's fair. I can buy that.
So, I mean, their Pac-12 strength or some of those Pac-12 writers who are just, I think, just throwing things out there. We're talking about that was while they're valuable is because of those late night window games. But next year when BYU comes in the Big 12, we can put a game in those late night window too. And now the Big Ten in 24, they're going to be able to have those late night window games with USC and UCLA in the mix. So that's not really – it doesn't add anybody to Pac-12 when two other conferences can do the exact same thing.
And I'll tell you this. If I'm ESPN, I'm not afraid of saying for this year, hey, guess what? I don't have the Pac-12 after dark anymore. Houston, you go play at 9. Congrats. Yeah. Or, you know, even – saying Auburn, great, you're not Alabama, you got a 9 p.m. kick this week.
Yeah.
Like they ESPN controls the scheduling. So they don't have to just put Pac-12 teams on after dark. They could put other teams on after dark. It's just easier.
I think they're the only broadcast partner, I think, that has that window. Because, you know, like Fox apparently doesn't care. And they're getting to where they care about college football more, but they're huge in the baseball, right? And during, that's like baseball playoffs, right? When college football is, you know, in the middle of the season. And they preempt
a lot of college football. They normally have an FS1 game that's late. Like, they'll have
nobody
like,
watches FS1.
I know, but part of it's because of what they put on there. Like, if I feel like the after dark game on FS1 is Hawaii versus, you know, somebody. I don't know. I can't think of who they play. Hawaii, San Diego Idaho. State. Yeah, there you go. Hawaii, Idaho. That's going to be that's like the late game on FS1.
Yeah.
Whereas the late game on ESPN is Utah versus Oregon State. More people are going to watch that game.
For sure. But I mean, that's also
if Fox wanted it. If Fox wanted, Fox could put stuff like that on FS1 and people would watch it, I think.
Yeah. I mean, and that was a whole part of the debate of about ratings and stuff is it's not apples to apples. If you say at this time, on ESPN2, Pac-12 school got a bigger rating than this hour, a different hour on FS1 for a Big 12 school, but you're comparing different time slots on different channels with less viewership. So of course the ESPN2 game is going to get more viewers because everyone has ESPN2.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've all made that argument for years now. I've seen this. I've seen so many because it was Stuart Mandel that
came out with
an article, and then I even read a Sports Illustrated article that called it out, and then Sikkim 365.
Sam Bradshaw did a great job.
Yeah, Sam Bradshaw came out and did some analysis on the TV ratings, and it really showed like the value that schools bring when you balance out the variables that exist on the networks and the time slots that they're in. And I think it showed that like Baylor was probably like the third most valuable.
Yeah, after the obvious schools of, you know, Oregon, Washington.
I think it was actually Oregon, Oklahoma State, Baylor, Oklahoma State, then Washington.
Yeah. You're right. And then right behind them, I think it was Washington State because people love watching Washington State.
Yeah, they've been a fun team, especially when they had Leach those few years. Unfortunately, they don't have Leach anymore. But yeah, I definitely watched Washington State much more when they had Leach. But then they replaced him with a guy that I think got fired because he wouldn't get vaccinated.
Nick Rolovich, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we had a whole episode on him majorly dropping the bag.
But they got a new coach. So I think I think
on the whole, the Pac-12 is going to stand pat. Just to close out this conversation
for time being.
I think the Pac-12 is going to stand pat. The best thing for them is waiting, just playing out the current deal as it goes and just see what happens. Who knows? Like Notre Dame may make a crazy decision that affects things. The SEC may move first and decide to do something crazy. The ACC may fall apart first. Who knows? So it's in the Pac-12's best interest to stand pat.
Yeah, until they can't. And that's all. And that's what probably George Klyavkov wants him to do.
Yeah, he wants to keep his job. He needs the conference to stay together, of course. Yeah. And you have to decide. And by stand pat, I don't think they're going to add anybody. I don't think they'll get enough of a consensus to go out and add San Diego State and Boise. They just sit tight for a full year.
Yeah, I mean, do what the Big 12 did. You know, we stayed at 10 when we lost. I think it was Colorado A&M in a 2010, 2011, whenever that was, and we stayed at 10. And you know, that's what that served us well as a conference for stability reasons.
Yeah.
Because at the time there wasn't really viable teams to add. And to go back what we were talking about earlier, the Big 12 was in a better position because they had kind of done the research in 2016 of who to add if they were going to add schools, decided not to. But they already had all that information of who would be the ones to add. We already knew. If we did expand, these are the teams we would target.
Right. We knew which ones were at the top of the list.
The Pac-12 just doesn't have that data. So it's going to take more time for them to decide if they do expand or want to add teams to their existing membership. They don't have the data to figure out who, what teams will actually bring value and otherwise what teams would be dilutive as opposed to, you know, adding something to their conference makeup.
Wouldn't it be crazy if we've spent the last couple of months screaming that the sky is falling and inevitably what happens is the Big 12 goes back to 12, which is what we're already planning on doing right now.
Yeah.
The Pac-12 adds two more to stay at 12 and they survive. And then nothing happens with the ACC because of the ridiculously stupid TV deal that they signed. And yeah, the super long grant of rights that still exists with the ACC. So nobody's willing to pay that much money to leave. And we just get this, the two super conferences of the Big Ten and the SEC, but then the ACC, Big 12 and Pac-12 just continue to survive. And football is just as the exact same as it is today, where four or five teams are you know, far and away better than everybody else. And then the other conferences are just similar and play each other.
Well, there's so many moving parts and for the future is so unknown because I think of all, we know the Pac-12 is where they're at. The Big 12 is kind of stable just because no one wants the teams that are in the Big 12 right now, which is whatever, fine, your loss. The ACC, their only saving grace is that crazy contract, because if theirs was coming up, they would be the same position the Pac-12 would be in, because you know the SEC is going to be coming for Clemson or one of the Florida schools, maybe North Carolina, you don't know. And the same thing with the Big Ten. They'd be going for the teams that kind of in their footprint, Syracuse, Boston College, Virginia, maybe.
I think North Carolina is more of a fit in the Big Ten.
You're probably, and yeah, it could absolutely. I do think the SEC wants to go into that Virginia area. So, but that's Virginia Tech. That's more of an SEC school, I think. Probably in their mindset. And
yeah, but would you want Virginia? I've heard people bring up Virginia Tech, and maybe I'm off here. I just don't see the huge value there.
Well, yeah, and maybe they don't. You know, I do for sure think it'd be like FSU, Clemson are SEC schools by every measure, except for
Miami.
Yeah, but I mean, does Florida want two more Florida schools? I mean,
yeah, but if you're the SEC, would you pick Miami over Florida State? I'd think about it. Miami's name carries more weight in my mind.
Yeah, but Miami has other issues. You know, it's a smaller enrollment-wise private
school. I mean, it's tiny.
Private school.
And, yeah, they don't have their own stadium. There's a lot of things about Miami that aren't great.
Florida State is, you know, another, like, state school in that part of Florida. So, I don't know. It's, I guess, me growing up when I did, I hold Florida State and it kind of nostalgic because, like, whenever I was my
formative years. You know, Miami, they were good at the same time.
Well, not whenever I was getting into football was right in the middle of, like, Charlie Ward, Florida State, and they were, like, at the top every single year. And maybe it's my affinity for the movie, The Program, which kind of copied Florida State as far as their look and everything. So I don't know,
man. Miami, I remember I got into football right like 99 2000 right in there, and Florida State was elite, but so was Miami, and that was right in the era of Miami having some of the greatest teams of all time.
Yes. So I guess it's a
difference. I don't know. That'd be an interesting question.
You're absolutely right.
Again,
it's a different age.
I don't know what's going to happen. I think there's definitely a non-zero chance that everything just looks the same as it does today.
Yeah.
So.
Or how about this? We have these three super conferences, but we have to make it manageable. So we're going to break those down into more regional sub conferences. And you end up with a group of schools that are like what the SWC used to be and what the Pac-12 used to be, what the Big Ten, you know? And so you have these, it's going to eventually roll around back to being what's regional still, even within this huge super conference. We have a pod of Texas Tech, Texas, TCU, Baylor, Houston, you know?
just get everybody together and get the best deal possible for everybody in the country. And then we all make the same amount of money and we compete. Wow, what a concept.
I think that's communism.
I know.
But moving on. There's another piece of brewing information within Baylor. So have you been following the recruitment of one Austin Novosad?
Yeah, I have. I hear the chatter all the time.
So apparently his decision, I guess, since he is still committed to Baylor at this current point in time, he's going to be kind of either really making a final, because he's had some recruiting from other schools. He went to Ohio State. A&M got on him recently and has kind of really been pushing. His parents are, you know, Aggie alum. So that I'm sure that has some type of pull to it. He chose not to go to some like recruiting event at A&M on Saturday and instead went to Baylor for a Baylor camp. So at this point, it's kind of a waiting game of, is he going to stick with the Baylor commitment from, he's been committed since December of 2021 and he's never decommitted. He has, you know, looked around and I don't blame him. Get a free trip to Ohio State, get a free trip to Notre Dame. Absolutely.
I won't fault him if he goes anywhere else. I don't know much about him personally. I had heard the thing about how he has like an Aggie family. Yeah. But you know, the only thing I know about him is that he throws a good ball and Baylor was interested in him very, very early on. I've seen a couple of clips. He looks like he's going to be a very, very good quarterback. Clearly highly skilled. I think Baylor was just the first one to kind of notice him when he was a little bit younger, before I think he even had an official rating, was when we offered him. And he committed pretty early on. I mean, you get excited that a D1 school offers you, and you take that. And I think, as we've talked about a ton on this podcast, kids like Dave Aranda, parents like Dave Aranda, they like this staff. Why wouldn't you want to go play behind a Jeff Grimes coach line, or an Eric Mateos coach line? And you know, I think Jeff Grimes has proved he can develop quarterbacks and recently had one of his starting quarterbacks drafted very early in the NFL draft. Mm-hmm. So there's plenty there for Baylor, but yeah, you have to go look at Ohio State, Notre Dame, and A&M. You have to. And if they offer you a scholarship and recruit you hard, as is happening right now, you have to seriously consider that. Especially with, you know, he's not blind to the current college football landscape.
Sure.
So, I wouldn't fault him for doing it. My personal opinion, I answered this question on ODB earlier last week. I think at the end of the day, Baylor was there first. I think Baylor has been loyal to him. I think he's recruited. I've seen him kind of like comment and like and mention stuff around other Baylor recruiting. He's close to home. He's from Dripping Springs, which is not far from Waco. Easy for his family to come and watch him play games. And I know there's those Aggie ties, but you know, I think there's something, I think most parents just support their kids' choices, and it wouldn't surprise me if he wanted to kind of blaze his own path. So I'm sticking with Baylor as what I think will happen with him, but I would have no ill will towards him if he picked any other school.
I wouldn't either. And I'm with you. I think at the end of the day, he's going to solidify his commitment to Baylor. And I think it goes a long way, like Sean Bell has done, the relationship that he's built to where we're still in it. Because really, honestly, that we've seen these a lot to where Baylor gets on people early. Then when the evaluations come in and it matches up with what Baylor had already done and put in the work, those kids flip, right? And they end up at University of Texas or Texas A&M or Ohio State or wherever. Same thing happened a couple of years ago. I think Baylor was on CJ Stroud really early and were recruiting him really hard. And then he goes to Elite 11 and ends up at Ohio State. It's just that's kind of what has been the MO. So it'll be huge, especially whenever Baylor can say, you know, we beat out Ohio State, Notre Dame, Texas A&M for our quarterback, that we never offered another quarterback.
Yeah.
And that's, these other schools have, like Baylor has been on Austin and have not wavered and not had insurance offers out there for anybody.
Right. They're not going out there and saying like, they're saying you're our QB and we're recruiting you that way.
Yep.
So
I was hoping maybe something would come down during the podcast, but nothing yet. So
it wouldn't surprise me if you don't see anything because he's already committed.
True. I would assume there'd be some type of post about he's sticking with Baylor or whatever, but you could be right. Could not see anything. He just, it's remain. I mean, because he is committed to Baylor. It's not like he decommitted.
Right. He is a verbal commitment to the Baylor Bears. He hasn't signed on the dotted line. And it may be one of those things where you don't really like officially see it until we hear on signing day.
Yeah. But I thought, considering hit where he goes to high school, and because they changed districts this year, so they moved up to 6A. And so they're now in the same conference or division or district, I guess. I can't even think, as like Austin Westlake and Lake Travis. So it's getting a more difficult road to the playoffs and everything. And you know, it's high school football. And I'm pretty sure practices start pretty soon for Texas.
Yeah, two-a-days are probably starting in the next week. Because school starts in 2 weeks. So
yeah, like tomorrow's going to be August 1st. When you're listening to this, it is August 1st. So I think
2 days actually might be starting this week for high schools. Well, because like, I think my wife's first day back to school is the 8th.
Ugh. Yeah. So I would think if I was his coach and maybe even him, I would probably want this wrapped up and not be distracting going into what's going to be a more difficult season.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, that's the thing. He may just, I'm not worried about it right now. Like I'm committed to Baylor and that's it.
Yeah. For sure. And speaking of practice, this week, Baylor starts practice on Thursday, August 4th is the fall camp's going to start. So we'll start seeing there'll be more like actual on the field football things happening around Baylor. And so we'll have more things to talk about as we ramp up to the opening season.
Yeah, get ready for a lot of the open practices, telling us that Shapen is that dude.
Yeah, I can't wait. Off of football and sports, has anything different that you're watching as this summer wraps up?
We watched the movie The Gray Man on Netflix.
Okay, how's that?
I liked it a lot. It's not smart, but it's not meant to be, and it doesn't try to be. It's Ryan Gosling and Chris Evans and kind of a Mission Impossible style, you know, John Wick-y and spy movie thing, CIA operatives versus each other. And it's like their performances and their fight scenes and like the stuff that's involved in the action is awesome. But then like the overarching villain story of like other people is just stupid dumb and doesn't need to be in the movie at all. But I give it like a good solid B and I highly recommend it. It was fun.
So
if you haven't watched it, I think you would enjoy
it. I've seen the trailer and clips, things like that. Cause it's directed by the Russo brothers who did like the Winter Soldier, Infinity.
Right. Yeah. They're the Marvel guys.
Yeah. I would assume you'd have that element.
Yeah, it's a little bit more it's a little bit more violent than the Marvel movies because it can be. It's not Disney. And the language isn't what you'd expect in a Marvel movie, but it's along the same lines of like quippy action. Like there's it's not lacking for one-liners.
So I'm going to jump back real quick. So apparently high schools can start tomorrow.
Yeah, that's what practice. I figured. A week out from school. That's normal. When I played high school football here, we always did two-a-day practices started the week before school started.
So yeah, so I would think in some way, shape, or form, it'll be wrapped up. So as far, I haven't watched anything differently. I'm still watching Westworld and kind of, it's right in the middle of that season and really nothing else.
I picked back up the new season of What We Do in the Shadows, which is another elite show.
So, yeah, that's, I'm trying to think. That's pretty much all I've been watching, like, on a weekly basis that I'm keeping up with.
Movie-wise, do you watch What We Do in the Shadows?
I've seen some of it. I haven't watched it regularly.
Got it.
I want to because I like everyone that's involved with the show.
Have you seen the movie that it's based on?
No, no.
Okay. The movie is really, really good.
I also want to watch, what is it? Our Flag Means Death or something like that. It's on HBO.
I have watched.
It has Taika Waititi in it.
Yeah. I've watched 2 episodes of that. And I didn't quite get into it, but I may revisit it. It wasn't bad. It just, when I was watching it, I was like, I just don't know if I want to watch this.
And so let me ask you this. Have you seen Letterkenny?
I have not watched a lot of it, but I do know what it is.
Okay. So I got really big during into Letterkenny. I guess it was maybe right when it came to Hulu. I don't know when, whatever year that was. Because it's a Canadian show and didn't have access to it. So I guess there's a new show based on a character from Letterkenny called Shorzy. And I've been thinking about getting into that because I do love Letterkenny. It's very funny. So I've seen some clips of that. So it looks like it right up my alley as far as comedy. So I'm thinking of jumping on that.
Okay. Fair enough.
What is another thing? Oh, the Bear. Have you seen that?
No, I see a number of people I follow on Twitter talk about it, but I have not watched The Bear.
I know what I will not be watching, though, and I never will watch. That's F1 Racing.
Okay. I watched it this morning.
Just because I get up on Sunday mornings, enjoy my coffee, and my timeline is flooded with things that I don't know what's going on. And these.
Well, then start watching it, and you'll know what's going on, and you can join in.
No, because I'm pretty sure like a large majority of Baylor Twitter's deep into F1 or college football Twitter, really. And
because F1's fun,
it's not gonna
and it fills up. It's what you got in the summer on the weekends. That's the other big thing about it is it's fun. It has a really cool reality show that's tied to it that you can watch in the off season, and it's Sunday mornings in the summertime when there's no other sports on. So there's no Premier League to watch. Baseball's not playing yet. There's no football. Watch F1. That's what it's there for.
Listen, you know what? We do have Sunday mornings. Jesus. Okay.
You go to church at 8 a.m.?
No, I don't go to church.
Yeah. Okay.
Anyway. So yeah, I'm waiting for House of the Dragon to.
I mean, it is a Game of Thrones production or whatever it's called.
It is in the Game of Thrones universe, back to Westeros. So, I'm getting excited about that. They've kind of sucked me back in and got me to forget all about that last season. So, I'm ready to jump back in that world. So
I'm ready to jump on that. I'm trying to think. Pretty sure there was a trailer I saw this week of something that got me excited.
Oh, and
I don't remember what it is.
I mean, Lord of the Rings series.
I'm very excited about the Lord of the Rings series on Amazon.
Yeah,
very excited about that. And I will be watching that immediately when it comes out. Like that'll be on the level of like Star Wars stuff for me.
Yeah, and it's going to be that's going to be easy because you have like the House of the Dragons like August 21st, I think. And then September is the Rings of Power.
Yes,
I believe.
And I remember now. And then next year is we got the teaser for Oppenheimer. That was the other one.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So it's going to be busy like early fall between the shows and the college football that's about to come about. Normally, what I normally do, how I gear up for football season, is been NFL preseason starts. Like I think the first game is like Thursday, and they kind of get in. Kind of that kind of feeds my like football fix is preseason watching the college players who probably won't make the team that I remember play in preseason games.
I hate
and
it.
And then you go to week zero. That's a whole, you know, that'll get you up to week zero. And then the season starts. So you hate preseason NFL football.
Yeah, I just don't care about things that don't count and that I know the teams don't care about. So I get what you're saying, like seeing college guys that you remember, but man, I just don't care. I will watch a total of 30 minutes of preseason football. I will turn it on a couple of times, but I will not pay attention to it whatsoever. I will forget that the Hall of Fame game is even on until it's in the fourth quarter when I see an ESPN alert that's like, tune in now.
Yeah, so I'll probably watch it just because I'm an addict and I want to watch football. But the team's playing, I mostly want to watch like Houston Texans games, obviously, because I want to see like Jalen Petrie. And then, of course, like Chicago Bears and the Saints. And the Patriots, because I want to see my guys, how they're doing, if they're going to make the team.
I hadn't thought about that. I mean, because, yeah, I will want to see Abram in New Orleans, and I will want to see Petrie. Yeah, it'll be one of those things where I'll turn on the Texans and watch it until Petrie's not on the field. I think
Petrie's like going to be a starter.
I think he is going to be a starter, yes.
So I don't exactly know how much he's actually going to play, but I'm sure he'll be out there some, at least to start.
Me and Mr. Jeffries on Twitter have been texting back and forth pretty much for days now, just pissed off every single day that the Texans don't offer a Jalen Petrie jersey for sale. Because we're
changed his number.
Did yeah, he's it? Number five now.
Yeah, he looks so good.
But they don't have a Petrie jersey for sale, and I don't want to make just a custom one. I want them to actually sell a Petrie jersey.
See, I'm not a jersey guy, but I do like the T-shirt jersey.
See, yeah, I'm a jersey guy too because I feel weird wearing jerseys in public, but yeah. You can wear buy a Jalen Petrie jersey. I will.
So you may have to do like I thought about that too, like doing a custom.
Yeah, you just get a five and put the name Petrie on it.
Yeah, but also I'm excited. I'm super excited about Tristan Ebner because I've been following like Chicago Bears Twitter, and they're like super excited because. Apparently, he's been roasting linebackers in running back receiving drills. And of course he does.
Because he's going to be a 40. Really great third down back and special teams guy. I think Tristan Ebner is going to have a solid little NFL career.
Yeah. And people who don't know, who didn't like follow Baylor, of course, like Chicago Bears fans, you know, they get out there and they're tweeting about, oh, like his speed, like that's for real. Like there's no joke. Like he's like super fast. And like, yeah, yes, he is. That's why he was like an all-American returner. But yeah, so that's kind of my thing. It's like, I want to watch those guys and Taekwon too, just because I want to see how, because he was picked super high from what I thought.
And he's their number one receiver now.
And that's, I want to see how he's doing. And I just want him to be successful because people were got kind of like questioning the pick at the time. So, and those are, also in Terrell Bernard, because he's another one. I think he could maybe like get, he's going to be on like the 2 deep for Buffalo Bills because they love him there.
Yeah, and he'll definitely be playing on the special team side.
Absolutely.
Too.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think you can probably say Taekwon's definitely going to make that roster because he's a second round pick. I mean, he's going to make the squad.
Oh, Taekwon's guaranteed to be on the 53. They don't have anybody at the wide receiver position. Jalen Petrie is guaranteed to be on the 53. I think Terrell Bernard's guaranteed to be on the 53. Ebner, because of the position he plays, I think is possible for practice squad. And then the same thing with Abram Smith. He's an undrafted free agent.
Yeah.
I could very much see him being on the practice squad.
Based on what they gave him to sign, like they signed him like a seventh. I mean, he got the same money as a seventh round pick. So
right.
He can make the squad because they're kind of light at running back. And you don't really know what's going on with Alvin Kamara because he did have like some kind of legal troubles during the Pro Bowl. So you don't know if anything's going to come of that. So I think he has a chance to make the 53. Kalen Barnes, I don't know. And I'm trying to think if there's anybody else. I'm sure there are some that were signed.
There's Jaren McVay in LA. Yeah.
And I don't put anything past Jeremy McVay. He probably he may make the 53 just because
don't this put is that kind of dude. You can't get past him.
No. So, but anyway, that's my thought on preseason football.
Okay, that's fair. You've sold me. Okay. I'm excited again, and then I'll be really disappointed when I turn it on.
Well, yeah,
it's it's the biggest tease out there. But again, I will my Saturdays will be filled with British accented commentators talking about guys kicking a ball.
There you go. That's all I got. Anything else, Joe?
Nothing. Just come on, you Spurs.
And where can people find you if they want more of your content?
My amazing content. You can find me at @_Joe_Goodman on Twitter. Come say hi and talk to me about my 9-3 prediction about Baylor. We'll talk about that in a couple of weeks.
Oh yeah. And my prediction, I kind of like replied to your prediction.
Yeah. You bodied me,
but,
where can the people find your account to see you bodying me?
So it's, @Matt_Workman and you follow podcasts at the Bear Den Pod.
Excellent.
And Matt, until next time,
have a great week.
Have a great week. And as always, sick 'em Bears.
Sick 'em.